Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to In the Studio with Linus here on the Essence of Success Radio Network. I'm so glad that you're joining me today, whether it's around the world or in the chat room or on the phone, because we've got a special show today. So welcome. For the month of June, we'll be doing several interviews with professionals and the public, so stay tuned and listen or watch for announcements about coming shows for the week, upcoming shows for the week. As always, we have sports, news, music, lifestyle, politics, and current stories. You can hear the show by next day if you missed the regular broadcast. Just listen to the show on www.theessenceofsuccess.net. Front page. If there is a subject, topic you would like to see discussed, contact us and leave a message. You can do that not only at the website, but we also have a page on Facebook, the Essence of Success Network. Now, let's get to tonight's show. We are so excited to have a very special guest, Mr. Harry Patsanis, fitness guru, author, fitness apparel journalist, and philosopher. Get ready for an exciting hour of mind and body explanations. Call in early to get an opportunity to speak with this world-renowned fitness and health conscious and philosopher of human existence. We'll be having an open discussion on perception, control, proactive, monetize, religion, marijuana. Yep, we even gonna touch marijuana. Laws and greed, just to name a few areas Harry will be speaking about. Also, I want to tell you that Harry has a book coming out, website, clothing and fitness apparel, which I mentioned earlier. Now, I'm going to read a little bit from his book. It's an excerpt. People often don't change until the pain of staying the same outweighs the fear of change. Most relationships are held together by thread, not wire. There's a big difference between self-worth and net worth. We don't want to solve our problems. We want our problems to solve for us. Problems solve for us, I should say. So with that, everybody, I'm bringing in our special guest. Good afternoon, Harry, or good evening, I should say.
How you doing, Linus?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
I think the introduction was fantastic, but I think all everyone's going to want to talk about is marijuana.
Well, you know, special guests, you don't normally get that, so, and I know that you are definitely informed on all those subjects quite well. So let's begin. Can you tell me a little bit, who is Harry? Tell me a little bit about Harry Patsanis.
My degree in college, I grew up in Ohio. Copley, Ohio. I graduated from the University of Akron, which is maybe 10 or 15 minutes from where I grew up, and my degree was journalism. But after I graduated, I did a couple freelance articles on the local sports teams. But just the environment of being controlled in a newsroom and having a lot of your content and those things, for lack of a better term, monitor, just wasn't for me. So I delved into health and fitness, which is something that I always loved, and for the next 20 or 25 years operated and owned health clubs. Always have loved sports, but over the last few years decided to get into writing and philosophy, which is something that's dear to my heart, equal to, or if not above, my love of fitness.
Well, all right. Well, with that, let's just segue right into your book. Tell us a little bit about this book that's coming out shortly.
It's called The Truth is a Lie, and the premise is based on growing up, a lot of things that were taught and told by the people that are close to us, whether they're our parents, educators, teachers. As we start to experience life, we see a lot of the things that we've been told and taught in complete confliction with what we see and experience. And I'll give you an example that kind of rolls right into the book.
Okay.
My father always told me, Linus, as far as I could remember, don't lie. if you lie, you're going to be in trouble. As long as you tell us the truth and as long as you're honest, we won't punish you. But if we catch you lying, then you're in big trouble. So growing up in Copley, it's about 30 or 45 minutes from Cleveland, and that's where I had relatives live. My grandmother, aunt, uncle, cousins. So one weekend, we would go up there a lot, but one weekend my dad asked me if I wanted to go. And I told him, absolutely not. I can't stand going up there. I feel obligated. I want to stay home. I want to play with my friends. And I go to school all week. So on the weekend, I want that time to be my own. So I did exactly what he had told me growing up, and it conditioned me to do, which is tell the truth. Well, the minute I told him that, and it wasn't what he wanted to hear, for the next 30 or 40 minutes, I had to hear how selfish I was, how narcissistic I was, that I didn't care about anyone or anything but myself, and that I should think of other people, not just me, and life isn't built around me and what I want to do. So the next week when he asked me, do you want to go to your grandmother's? I said, I'd love to. Because he had already conditioned me that even though he told me for all those years, tell the truth, in that one action, Lennis, he conditioned me that when I told the truth, I got punished for it. So I learned, even though for 7 or 8 years he told me one thing, in one encounter, I learned that the guy for all those years that asked and demanded for me to tell him the truth really wanted me to lie to him. And the minute I told him what he wanted to hear, he was fine with it. And then you start seeing that behavior as you go up and through society, that the world asks us to be honest. They demand that we're honest to them, but then the minute you are, you get punished for it. And you start seeing these trends of people saying one thing, doing another, you know, and it becomes commonplace. And we're in a society where people demand that we're honest and we're forthright to them. But then most of the times when you tell them something they don't want to hear, they punish you for it.
Yes, I agree with that. I definitely agree. Made me think of some examples, but I'm not going to talk about them. Well, Terry, you brought up sure, darling. Let's go into perception, because I like
sure.
that. Yeah.
I think perception also is based on a lie. In my book, Lennis, I have a section and I call it the Sherlock Holmes theory. And most
okay.
people obviously know about Sherlock Holmes, a great character in American literature, but he wasn't a superhero with these unbelievable physical or cerebral attributes. He was just a person that's based on logic. Meaning he would look at the facts and clues, and then he would let those facts and clues lead him to a certain conclusion. But that's not the way that most people work. Most people don't look at facts and clues and evidence and then draw a conclusion. Most people, Lennis, immediately draw their conclusion. And then the more the facts and evidence you provide them that comes in conflict or contradiction to their conclusion, they just distort or bend or twist those facts to fit their predetermined narrative and conclusion. It happens all the time. People are genuinely lazy. So it's very easy to make judgments. They don't take much time. You don't have to do a lot of analysis. You don't have to look at facts or evidence. You just immediately draw a conclusion or create your own perception. Now, the problem with that is when people immediately create their own perspective or perception, the more you show them facts to the contrary, they become like ticks, and then they dig into that perception and don't want to let go of it. And so it becomes very difficult to communicate with people, because people idealistically should be open-minded, should want to learn, should want to grow, and should want to listen. But people don't want to listen to other people's opinions. I always say people aren't looking for information. They're looking for affirmation or validation. So it becomes very difficult, because we're told the key to every relationship is communication, but no one wants to listen to anyone. They just want their own opinions and views validated.
Very good. Well, you know what? Let's go for the jugular vein. Let's talk about religion.
Sure. Okay, you're going to hit me right from the beginning. Okay.
I said from the jugular, I'm going for it.
Okay, nope. Going right for the throat. I'll give you another example that's in my book.
Okay.
I grew up in the Orthodox Church. Even though I was never religious, nor do I believe in religion, because to me, religion is different than faith. Faith is a belief, in my opinion. Religion is a business. They're completely separate things. So when
Agreed.
I was, they're completely separate things. That's not an opinion. That's a statement of fact. So when I was 10 or 11, I went to a funeral with my family. Now, I grew up being told that the afterlife in heaven is a better place. It's, for lack of a better term, Lennis, it's nirvana. So when I went to a funeral when I was 10 and 11, I was really confused because everyone was crying and was really upset. So on the way home, we're driving back, and I asked my parents, I said, well, why was everybody crying? And they said, well, they're upset because the person that passed away is gone and they're a really great person. So I told my parents, I said, that makes no sense to me. And they go, why? And I said, because I've been taught growing up specifically through the church that heaven and the afterlife is a better place. And I said, if this man was suffering, which he was, and now he's gone to a better place, then why would everybody be crying for him? They should be happy. He's no longer suffering. He's in a better place. So why would all these people be so distraught? So my parents didn't really have a good answer. So they asked me, well, why do you think everyone was crying? I said, it's simple. They're not crying for him. They're crying for themselves because of the loss that they feel. You know, I grew up in Ohio. It was really cold 6 months of the year. Well, if I went to Hawaii, no one should cry. I'm going to a lot better place. So people
True.
Shouldn't be upset. So I realized they weren't crying for him. They were crying for themselves. And what that told me is that even in death, people were making things about themselves. So it caused me to look at the church and religion and a lot of the teachings and really question them. Well, then as I started growing up, I looked at the church, for lack of a better term, as a middleman in business. You know, everybody goes to eBay and Amazon now because they want to buy direct, Glennis. They don't want to go through a wholesaler or a middleman. They want to go directly to the source because it's a better price and you cut out a third party. Well, religion always espouses that the reason they want you to come to church is they want you to develop a better relationship with God, and they consider that the conduit to do it. But I remember thinking, Lennis, really early on, the last thing a lot of times the church wants to do is strengthen your relationship with God, because if they strengthen your relationship with God, you're not going to need them anymore. So their goal isn't to get you to strengthen your relationship with God. It's to get you to feel that you need them to strengthen your relationship with God. And without them, that you're going to be lost and floundering in the wilderness. It's very similar to the medical profession. If a doctor cures a patient, they lose a client. So when you go to a doctor, they're not concerned about fixing your symptom. They just want to give you medicine to fix the problem, and then, or fix the symptom, excuse me, and then that way you're going to be dependent on them and continue to need them for day after day, month after month, year after year. The church's job, they'll never want to admit this, they'll never want to acknowledge it, but their job, plain and simple, in many cases, is to simply get you to come back. Because if they can get you to come back, they can get your money to come back. And if they really strengthen your relationship with God, then you're not going to need them anymore. And if you don't need them anymore, they can't monetize you anymore.
That's true.
Now, these are difficult things. Go ahead, please.
No, go ahead. I was just coughing. Go ahead.
These are difficult things for people to accept or want to accept because they've been taught and told something different. But growing up, we really believe that the people that are teaching and telling us things are doing it for our benefit. As we get older, we realize that a lot of the things that they taught and told us weren't for our benefit. It was for their benefit in a way of controlling us. And there's a lot of people that believe laws and religion were instituted simply as a way to control society. And we've become, I do too. And we've become a world that's leaderless. There are very few people now that lead, and very few people that are ever going to say what they feel. But the reason we're a world that lacks leadership is because from the day we've been born, we've been taught and trained and conditioned to follow. So it's very difficult to follow for 20 years and then all of a sudden one day start leading. Very difficult.
This is true. This is so true. I agree with you. One Easter, I took all my little stuff back and my mom was pissed. But that was to make her look good, not me. I never found
sure.
it in the Bible.
Well,
so you're
and,
right.
And it even starts, like a good example, let's take, even before we go back into religion, take my name, Harry. Plain and simple. It was my grandfather's name, my mother's father, who I loved adamantly. He was a great man. Well, I remember one day, Lennis, I was maybe 13 or 14, and I asked my dad, why did you name me Harry? And so right away, he tried to put a guilt trip on me and flip it. And he goes, well, that's your grandfather's name. What, you don't love your grandfather, or are you ashamed? And I said, this isn't about my grandfather. I love my grandfather. I said, but did you ever think for one second, before you named me, what that name would do for me? No. all you thought about is that's the name you wanted me to have. You wanted me to have it. I said, but it shouldn't have been about you. It should have been about me. But even in naming me, their concern or thought process wasn't what I would have to endure or what I would have to go through with the name Harry. It was simply the fact that they wanted me to have that name.
True.
So even in naming me, the thought process from my parents was very selfish and self-indulgent. It wasn't about what was best for me. It's about what they wanted. And the minute I questioned it, they tried to make me feel guilty or make me feel bad. You know, like here's a good example. I love apples. I'm not going to name my daughter Apple. Because the first thing I'm going to think about is that poor girl won't make it past the age of 8. But even in something that simple, we make the mistake of thinking, if you really look at it, it's so ironic. We need a license, Lennis, to drive. We need a license to fish. We need a license to travel. The most important responsibility on this planet is being a parent, and it's probably the only thing on this planet we don't need a license for. We just assume that because someone can procreate, that automatically means they have the skill set to be a parent. I mean, when I was 16, I had to take like 80 hours to drive a car. My parents probably had to spend about 20 minutes in bed to be a parent. And so a lot of the things that should occur in life don't, and a lot of the things that don't occur in life should. And I always ask people one question. If you came down from another planet and landed on Earth today and observed it, and you didn't have all of this brainwashing and education and all of these beliefs and thoughts beaten into you, would you look at anything the same way that you do now?
You wouldn't.
And the answer is probably no. So we are people that are really conflicted, Lennis. I believe there's a huge battle, not just in society, but there's a battle within us. And every day we're at war within ourselves. And each day, one side wins the war, the next day the other side wins the war. And what we're fighting is the person that we want to be and the person we feel we should be and can be. And we're at battle with the person we've been taught to be and told to be and that society has trained us to be. And that conflict is within us in every decision, in every circumstance, and in every situation that we face on a daily basis.
I wanted to add to your about the parents telling us the truth, even with the other, a really good one. We're programmed when we're born, because look, Santa Claus and Easter, two of the biggest lies.
Yes.
So before you're a year old, they're already telling, and it's a lie. I'm thinking as you're saying this, and I'm like, well, we start off being lied to when we're babies.
Yes. And no, and it's lie with control. The goal of any parent, let's face it, being a parent or being an adult is hard, Lennis. You've got responsibilities, you've got mortgages, you've got utilities, you've got insurance, you've got groceries. There's a laundry list of things that as an adult you have to take care of that you're responsible for. The last thing that you want is a child running around who thinks for themselves, who speaks their mind, and who opposes you at almost every turn, because as an adult, that just makes your life more difficult. So a lot of parents look at their children as a warden would look at prisoners. Your job is to go to your cell, do what you're told, eat when you're told, do your homework when you're told. As a child, we have no control over anything when we come into the world. We don't get to choose our name, where we live. We don't even get to choose whether we wanted to be born. Everything is chosen for us. And then the people that make these choices, they want their life to be easier, Lennis. So the best way to make their life easier is to get us to fall in line and to control us. That way, by never questioning adults, we therefore make their life easier.
Now, let me ask you something. What do you think of people that have a control factor in their personality? Do you believe that's from childhood?
Yeah, I believe. How many times when you were growing up did your parents or adults tell you, well, do what I say, or that's what I was taught to do? So they control us because they were controlled. And instead of saying, I despised being controlled, so the last thing that I'm going to do is control my child, a lot of times what they say is, I was controlled for so long, now I'm in a position where I can control someone else. And so it just becomes this perpetual generational cycle where it's passed down from generation to generation. I remember telling my dad once, I said, Dad, why do we do this? And he goes, well, Harry, it's tradition. That was his answer. And I said, well, slavery was tradition. We don't do that anymore. And then he got mad. Because I disproved his theory in one sentence. Just because something is tradition or it was taught to you doesn't make it right. But because people are lazy, it's easier to teach someone what you've been told than to think for yourself. And so this is all about control. To answer your question again, do I believe people want to control other people because they were controlled? Yes, absolutely. But I also believe one of the reasons they want to control other people is because they're lazy, it makes their life easier, and they're insecure. I don't want to control anyone. I don't want to tell anyone what to think, what to do. And it's amazing. I'll give you one really simple, funny story. Growing up, when we would eat, we would all wait till my father got home to eat. And I asked my mom, well, why do we do that? She goes, well, your dad wants to eat as a family and he works all day. And I said, well, I want to eat when I'm hungry. I don't want to wait 4 hours because it's convenient for someone else. I'm hungry now. Then she goes, well, no, that's how your dad wants it. And he wants us to eat as a family. But then the minute my dad got home and we sat down at the dinner table, he turned on the television and watched it the entire time. So I realized it had nothing to do with him wanting us to eat as a family. It's just a way of controlling all of our thoughts and our actions. And the more you can control someone, especially as an adult to a child, the easier you make your life. And the easier your life is, the more tolerable it is to get up the next day and do it all again. The problem is, as a child, you have no ability to fight back. You don't have any money. You don't have a job. You're totally dependent on adults, and they know this. And they take advantage of it because they know you've got nowhere else to turn.
Definitely agree with that. Well, have to become proactive, don't we?
well, we do. And the first thing, in my opinion, where it starts is to say, okay, this battle within me, I have to choose a side. And I think the best way to look at it and choose a side and be the person you want to be starts with quit worrying about how other people look at you and view you and what they're going to think of you. The minute you can start focusing on not worrying about how you're perceived or what other people think of you, you have a much greater chance of acting in a way that's truly reflective of who you are. Now, I'm going to ask you a simple question.
Okay.
When you die, minus family members that have to be there, how many people, minus any family member, do you think will be at your funeral that really, truly love you and care about you?
About 50 people.
Okay. So why would you go through an entire life trying to please the 300,000 or 400,000 people that you become encountered with just to have 50 people there when you can live a life being exactly who you are and true to yourself and still get the same 50?
This is true.
We're so concerned with people perceiving us well or liking us that we don't even think for a second, do we even like any of these people that we're trying to get to like us?
It's true. And it should only
and
be
most
on
of the times the answer is no. Yeah. The answer is no.
Harry, hold on. We got a call.
Absolutely.
Hi, welcome to the show. You're listening to Harry Pisanis, and this is Linus. You have a question for our guest tonight? Guess not. Guess they just want to listen to the show. I get that a lot. Okay,
that's fine. That's great.
That's fine. Listen, Harry, can we go to, let's talk about money, and then we'll go to marijuana.
Sure.
Okay, let's talk about this monetized world that we live in.
Everything is based off money. The people that always tell you, Linus, money is important are the ones that always have it. Now, you and I talked a couple times about religion when we were just talking off air. And this is another reason we can relate it right to money. When I was growing up, I told you this, I always heard our pastor saying that our church was a house of God and it was a house of the Lord. So one day when he was taking questions, I raised my hand and I said, you always say this is a house of God and a house of the Lord. He goes, it is. I said, then I have a simple question. And he goes, what's your question? I said, how come every week when we come to church, you pass the collection plate around five times? I said, if it's a house of God or a house of the Lord, how come he isn't covering his bills? Now, a lot of people, because I was really young, took that as me being sacrilegious or disrespectful. It was neither. It was just based in logic. You know, when you came to my parents' house, my dad's name was on every bill. It was his house, which means he's responsible for all the bills. Well, then I never understood when you go to church and it's a house of God, well, if it's his house, how come they're always asking us to pay his bills? And what that taught me is no matter where you go or no matter what situation you're in, even something considered by society, not by me, but considered by society to be the utmost authority, be it God or religion, still comes down to money. When someone's deathly ill and they go to a doctor's office, they could literally be bound over, holding their stomach, you know, spitting out blood, barely able to make it to the counter, and the first question the receptionist is going to be is, do you have your insurance on you? So there isn't one scenario or situation that isn't based on money. And because I spent 20 or 25 years in fitness, I'll give you a perfect example when it comes to health and fitness. We're always telling people, Lennis, to eat better, to be more conscious of their body, to be more conscious of their health, and that fitness and eating well is a priority. But then when you go to the grocery store and you want to buy items that are health conscious, they cost six times more than your regular item. Yeah. So we're telling people every day, eat well, get fit, get your body in shape, get your mind right, you're going to live longer and feel better. But when they go to the grocery store, they can't afford to eat well and be health conscious. You can't afford an $8 box of organic cornflakes when you can get six boxes of regular cornflakes for the same price. You just can't afford it. So we're telling people to eat well and to be health conscious, but monetarily we're forcing them to eat poorly and not take care of themselves, and there's a reason why. All of the companies, the sugar manufacturers, the people that produce fructose, high fructose corn syrup, they have a vested cost, Lennis, in keeping their product down and their product price down. Because if healthy food costs less, then they're going to be out of business. So everything on this planet, in this world, evolves around money. And the minute money becomes a factor, then decisions are made not based on what's right for society or what benefits society, but they're based on monetizing society.
Which is where we're at and probably will be for many more years to come. Yep.
And there's nothing more prevalent from that perspective than medicine and marijuana and how we monetize it. It's embarrassing. I believe the reason marijuana Is it legalized already in every state? Isn't because it can't help people. It's been proven that it can. It's because if you legalize marijuana, the pharmaceutical companies, the medical industry, and the government who's in bed with both of them, billions of dollars of revenue based on pharmaceutical drugs and the medical industry would go away in a day. And that's something the government will not allow. If you can reduce or eliminate your ailments and your pain with marijuana, now all of a sudden you don't need to go to the pharmacy every week, fill out that prescription, pay for it, and continue to keep going back every week. So that's the last thing that our government wants, because they're in bed with the drug manufacturers, the pharmaceutical companies, the pharmaceutical reps. And so because there's so much money already vested in those professions, they now have a vested interest in not seeing marijuana or any other drug come to market, because if that occurs, they're out of business and they can't have that.
It is so true. You know, a lot of holistic doctors within the last 10 years have come up dead, either they say suicide, but drowning, murder, car accidents, or whatever, because holistic medicine is so cheap. It's like $7 or $8, and I know this because I take it for cancer prevention, way cheaper than what the big pharma would have charged me, Harry, was $360-some dollars a month. And this medicine is even better that I'm taking than the pharmaceutical. So you're so correct.
Well, and it's, look at it, reverse engineer it, Lennis. It's not only not better for you, it's better for you, but the drugs that you're taking are harming you. They're damaging your kidneys, your livers. I saw an interview a couple weeks ago with an NFL player who lives in a state where marijuana is legal. And he says the NFL won't legalize marijuana to reduce our pain, but they'll let me take 50 prescription drugs that will ruin my liver, affect my kidneys, cause my organs to shut down, and affect my heart. That's because when you watch an NFL game, every third commercial is a drug manufacturer. So the reason they won't allow their players to take something that can ease their pain and, more importantly, force their players and steer them to drugs and medicine that in the short and long term is going to truly damage them is because they're partners with these companies. It's ironic. I can drive down the street, see a guy at the corner of a street selling drugs, and 5 minutes later I can see the police car pull up and arrest him and put him in the back of the car. Then I can drive 10 more feet to the other side of the street, pull into a driveway, and it's CVS Pharmacy where I walk right in, and there's a guy selling drugs. The only difference is he's wearing a white lab coat.
Hello.
They're both drug dealers. They're both selling drugs. The only difference is the government allows the pharmacist to sell drugs because they're getting revenue from the tax of those drugs. The drug dealer isn't being arrested because he's doing something illegal. he's being arrested because the government hasn't found a way to monetize him yet. Once they find a way to monetize the drug dealer, then what he's doing won't be illegal, because if it was illegal, then there wouldn't be a pharmacy on this planet, because that's all a pharmacist is a legalized drug dealer. It's the only difference. But the government can tax and monetize one, and they can't tax and monetize the other. So that's where we get into perception. You know, even when you watch a movie, Lennis, they always show the drug dealer, you know, he hasn't showered in weeks. It's always 2 a.m. that he's selling drugs. He's always dressed in black, which has a negative perception or connotation. But when you think of the pharmacist, oh, he works 9 to 5. He's got banker's hours. He's got a brand new, spotless white lab coat. You know, everything is white and pristine and clean, where the drug dealer is dark and dirty, and it's 2 a.m. So they conjure and create these perceptions to implement and impart a seed in your mind to get you to perceive one differently than the other. That's all it is. Everything in our society is based on perception and what we've been told and taught to accept as right or wrong. And you look at the history of life, whether it's Abraham Lincoln, JFK, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, look at all of the people. You talked about all of these holistic doctors. Look at all of the people that ever stood up and tried to create change and tried to get society to think and look at things from a different perspective. What was the outcome to every one of those individuals?
Well,
every one of them. And that has nothing to do with race. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, black. Kennedy, Lincoln, white. They all tried to promote change. They all tried to get society to think and act from a different perspective and point of view. You talk about all of these holistic doctors. They're all, I read these stories, and one of my friends is really well versed. And he told me about a lot of these holistic doctors that are, quote unquote, mysteriously dying. They're not mysteriously dying. They're getting killed off one by one because they're trying to convey a message that the establishment doesn't want anyone to hear.
Yeah. Hold on, Harry, we got a call.
Sure.
One sec. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question for Harry?
Well, yes, and hi, Harry. Hi, Lennis. I really want to say, well, first of all, I want my book signed, okay? It's got to be signed, Harry, all right?
Thank you.
But the thing is, I just want to say, with the excerpt of people often don't change until the pain of staying the same outweighs the fear of change. And that is what happened with me with my weight loss. Because, Harry, I tried to lose weight for my health. So I went and had the surgery, okay? But what I learned from the surgery is that surgery helped me to program my mind that I needed, that I could look at my portions and the amount of food and the type of food I was eating. But I had to have the surgery to do that. But it was all a matter of changing my mind. So, you know, it's I just don't know, because, see, the programming of the mind changes everything. The matter, the thinking, the way you think just changes you. So that's just all I had to say.
Well, number one, pleasure to meet you. And number two, the point you're making is not only valid, it's the point that everyone should make. A good example, when people go to the gym, they go there to work their muscles. What people don't realize is the greatest and biggest muscle in the body is your brain.
Yes. Yeah.
And if you work that every day by thinking, by questioning everything, we should question everything. That's what democracy is. Not accepting what we're told, but questioning it. And growing up, we're always trying to shield our kids from pain and the world as it really is, instead of explaining to them that pain can be the greatest motivator to self-improvement. And so the brain, like I said, is the biggest and greatest muscle in the body, and it's the one muscle on a daily basis we never work.
Absolutely.
I changed
my mind.
Yeah, and if you change your mind, it's the domino theory. The first time the first domino falls, then they all fall. It's the way the mind works. If you change the way your mind thinks, then everything after that is going to change.
The
most important thing that people can do is think, reflect, and be accountable to themselves and the situation. Like you said, you just learn to think differently. You learn to look at things differently. And by thinking and looking at things differently, now all of a sudden your actions and your behavior follow suit.
Yes. Yes and yes. And it was just a matter of changing the mind. If I had done that, I mean, it was no magic in the surgery itself. It just convinced me to change my mind. So if I had done that first, I wouldn't have needed the surgery. So you're so right.
Yes. But you've got to remember, too, society a lot of times doesn't want you to change your mind, because if you change your mind, then you're either going to be able to think for yourself, which means they won't be able to think for you. And if they can't think for you, then they no longer have control over you. And if they no longer have control over you, they no longer can get money from you. So the more you think for yourself, then the less you allow someone else to think for you. And sadly, the people in authority in our country, they don't want you thinking for yourself. They want you to believe that you need them to think for you. Because if they can convince you of that, then they've got control over you, and then they can get what they want out of you, which is sadly a lot of times money. So you've done a great job by thinking for yourself, and by doing that, you've changed the way you feel and think, and then therefore the way your body looks and the way your body feels and the way it responds.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. Thank you.
No, it's my pleasure.
Yes. Harry, we're coming down to 4 minutes. Oh, I don't want this to end. Jesus. So, oh, God, you are so good and so interesting and on point. Oh, my God, you're on point. I needed to do this show for an hour and a half. I'm sorry, public. I only scheduled it for an hour, and now I wish I had it
for
an hour.
Well, that's all right. We've got
so
plenty
we're definitely
of, number
bring
one,
you
we've
back.
Got plenty of days in the future. Absolutely.
And I'm bringing you back because I want this to continue. I don't want this to be the last show on this subject. So I'm definitely bringing you back. My God, it's so interesting. Because there was even things we didn't get to, like fitness, problem solving, self-worth. And I wanted to
that's all
right.
We've got plenty of time in future shows. Sure, we've got I love
Please
fitness.
Speak a little bit.
Sure. I love fitness. I've had people ask me from time to time, because I love philosophy, who I follow or a particular practice, but someone I always have admired, and it came through my friend Sonny, who turned me on to him. I'm a big admirer of Bruce Lee, because he was big into the mind body. And he always said, let your mind and body be like water, let it just flow. Well, the way that I work out, and I created a workout program that I followed for, I'm 53, and I've worked out since I was 15, but over the last almost 30 years, Lennis, I've only missed probably 10 days of working out over 30 years.
Oh, my God. Tremendous.
I'm saying it not for ego. I love working out, but I built a program and I built a fitness routine around the way that I philosophically think. And it's just the opposite of most routines. Like a lot of routines out there are really quick or fast or violent thrusting movements. I do just the opposite. What I teach people to do is use very light weights and not focus on the weight that you're using or the amount of weight, but on the movement and the repetition, so you're doing no harm and damage to your body. A lot of times, the heavier the weight that you use, the more you force your joints and your ligaments and your cartilage to interact, and eventually, as we all get older, your body starts to break down. So what I do is I do a therapeutic, almost rehabilitative type of workout. So when people are working out, they're not just working out, but they're focusing not just on getting healthy and looking and feeling better, but just as important, not getting hurt or injuring themselves, which is vital. Because I always tell people, the most important ability is availability. Well, if you're hurt all the time, then you're not going to be able to work out. And they say that past the age of 30, Lennis, it takes 3 workouts to make up for every one you miss. So what I teach people is to work out properly, slowly, never lock out, focus on your breathing, focus on the movement, so that way you're not only improving your health, but you're avoiding injury, so the next day you won't be in such pain and discomfort that you can work out again. Now you've got one day on top of the next day. Then if you work out properly, you'll add another day to that, and eventually a day becomes a week, becomes a month, becomes a year, becomes a decade, becomes a lifetime. So this is all based not just on looking better and feeling better, but it's a preventative medicine type of workout while you're actually working out. And it's something I created years ago that'll be part of the program on my website along with my books.
Good, because I was just getting ready to ask, like, Harry, is there any way I can pick that up, your video or, you know, on this workout?
Yeah, absolutely. What we'll do, my website is going to be MBLLP, MBLLP, which is Mind Body LLP. It'll be out with my book in about 2 to 3 weeks, a month at the latest. But what we can do is I can come back on before everything goes live. We can have another great conversation, and then we can explore more topics and get in depth about everything as well at that point.
Okay. Yes, I'd like to, just before your book comes out, because that then you can tell us where we can buy it and your fitness, and right, so the public knows. Yes.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, I'm glad to tell your public. I'm just, you know, more concerned with just changing the way that people look at the world and the way that they think. And I love having discussions, and you and I get along really well, so I would more than welcome that.
Sounds good. Thank you. Well, Harry, do you have any closing thoughts before we go off the air that you'd like to pass on to everybody?
Sure. I would just tell people a simple premise that one of my friends told me once. He said, if you be yourself, you'll find yourself by yourself. And I want to tell people it's okay to be by yourself as long as you're true to who you are. Then the people that gravitate towards you will be really gravitating to the person that you are, not the person that you're trying to show them. So I want to tell people, don't focus on what you've been taught and told. Focus on what you know to be true.
Couldn't end it any better. I want to thank you, Harry. Oh, my God, it has been my honor and pleasure to have you on in the studio with Linus. It just was remarkable. The hour went too quick.
It went way too fast.
But yes, it went too quick. So for the folks around the world in the chat room and also people that have called in, we are going to have Harry back, and I'll find out from him prior to his book coming out, that we'll have him back and give you opportunity to, you know, ask questions or whatever. But we'll definitely be having him back. And again, I thank you, Harry, so much. And I thank the people from around the world in the chat room and on the phone that were listening to the show. I appreciate you as well. And you know my saying, as I close out, if no one has told you they love you today, well, I do. Thank you, Harry. Love you. Mm-hmm.
Love you, Linus. Thank you so much. Greatly appreciate it, as always, and the honor is mine.
Oh, thank you. All right, and we're out. Have a good one, folks. Be safe out there.